today we'll be reading from Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Translations and Purports by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. We're in the Majjha Lila, 8th chapter. Talks between Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy. And we're going to be reading through texts 103 through 107. So first, please repeat. Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jaya
Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda
Jaya
Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jaya Jaya Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda
Jaya
Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Jaya Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda
Chapter 8, Text 103. Now, do we do call and response? Please repeat. Radha lagi gopire yadi sakshat kare tyag.
Radha lagi gopire yadi sakshat
kare tyag. Tabe jani radhaya krishnera gada anurag. Radha lagi gopire yadi sakshat kare tyag. Tabe jani radhaya krishnera gada anurag. Please chant.
Radha lagi gopire yadi sakshat kare tyag.
Word for word synonyms, please repeat. Radhalagi.
Radhalagi.
For the sake of Srimati Radharani.
For the sake of Srimati Radharani.
Gopire.
Gopire.
the gopis. Yadi, if sakshat, directly. Kare, does. Tyaga, rejection. Tabe, then. Jani,
we can understand.
Radhaya, in Srimati Radharani. Krishnera, of Lord Krishna. Gada, intense. Anurag, affection. Translation. If Lord Krishna rejected the company of the other gopis for Srimati Radharani, we can understand that Lord Sri Krishna has intense affection for her. Text 104. Ramananda Roy continued, please therefore hear from me about the glories of Srimati Radharani's loving affairs. They are beyond compare within these three worlds. Text 105. Finding herself treated equally with all the other gopis, Srimati Radharani displayed her tricky behavior and left the circle of the Rasa dance. Missing Srimati Radharani's presence, Lord Krishna became very unhappy and began to lament and wander throughout the forest to search her out. Text 106. Lord Krishna, the enemy of Kamsa, took Srimati Radharani within his heart, for he desired to dance with her. Thus he left the arena of the Ras dance and the company of all the other beautiful damsels of Raja. Text 107. Being afflicted by the arrow of Cupid and unhappily regretting his mistreating Srimati Radharani, Madhava, Lord Krishna, began to search for her along the banks of the Yamuna River. When he failed to find her, he entered the bushes of Vrindavan and began to lament. One sentence purport. These two verses are from the Gita Govinda 3, 1 and 2, written by Jayadev Goswami. So here in this section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita, we're hearing about the topmost level of Srimati Radharani's service and devotion to Lord Krishna. So much so that Krishna even abandoned the other gopis for the sake of simply being with Radharani. So we should not misunderstand this to think that the service of the other residents of Vrindavan was in any way faulty. All the residents of Vrindavan who are engaged in Krishna's eternal lila necessarily have completely perfect devotional service. They are completely perfect in their devotion. Yet, we find that some are more completely perfect. And some are even more completely perfect until we come to the most absolutely completely perfect, in the form of Srimati Radharani's devotion. We were reading earlier this week in the 28th chapter of the 10th canto, Krishna rescues Nanda Maharaj from the abode of Varuna, about some other residents of Vrindavan. And in that pastime, the cowherd men noticed that Nanda Maharaj disappeared within the Yamuna River. He simply went in to take a dip and he never came out. When they noticed that Maharaj Nanda was missing, they immediately said, "Oh Krishna! Oh Ram!" And what happened? just by once chanting, "O Krishna, O Ram," immediately Krishna appeared to rescue Nanda from the abode of Varuna. Now, Krishna never appears when somebody calls him, unless that calling is completely pure. So this is proof that all the residents of Vrindavan are on that most complete level of devotional service. So we also want Krishna to appear when we chant his holy name. But Krishna will not appear when we chant his holy name unless and until our bhakti is completely pure, free from all material contaminations. Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita that paritranaya sadunam vinashaya chadushvitam dharma samstapanarthaya. He gives so many reasons why he appears. Oh, I come to annihilate miscreants. I come to deliver pious people. I come to reestablish principles of religion. But actually, Krishna appears to answer the earnest crying of his devotees to have his personal association. That's his real reason. That's what really causes Krishna to appear. So that means that calling itself has to be so pure. So in the Janma Leela of Krishna, this point is very nicely illustrated, that Krishna will not appear until bhakti is pure. So in that pastime, we know that a few events occurred before Krishna appeared in the womb of Devaki. Of course, right before he appeared, Balaram appeared in the womb of Devaki. But even before that, Devaki gave birth year after year. For 6 years, she gave birth to a male child. Each of those male children were at once killed by their uncle Kamsa. So it's explained, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur actually explains, that Devaki represents bhakti. The 6 sons of Devaki that were killed by Kamsa represent the 6 enemies of material association: kama, krodha, lobha, moha, mada, matsarya, lust, anger, greed, illusion, madness, and envy. That these 6 enemies of material association had to be purged from the womb of bhakti before Krishna agreed to take his birth there. It's explained that these 6 sons of Devaki, they are reincarnations of the 6 sons of Marichi. Marichi is a mental son of Lord Brahma. He represents the mind. He's an incarnation of the mind. And from that mind came 6 sons: Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, and Matsarya. These 6 sons were then cursed by Brahma, their grandfather, due to their laughing at Lord Brahma when they witnessed that he was going to engage in an act of impropriety. He cursed them that you shall take birth in the family of demons. So gradually they did take birth as grandsons of Hiranyakashipu to the father. Their father was Kalanemi. In their birth as sons of Kalanemi, they worshipped Lord Brahma to become virtually immortal. Hiranyakashipu became very upset. Why are you worshipping Lord Brahma? I'm the king of the universe. You should only worship me. How dare you go above me? as though there's somebody above me. Therefore, I curse you that you shall be killed by your own father. So now these six boys had to take birth from the womb of Devaki. And their own father, Kalanami, took birth as Kamsa. So that these six boys who represent Kama, Krodha, Lobha, Moha, Mada, and Matsarya, they were ultimately killed by their own father in the form of Kamsa. So Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains that Devaki represents bhakti. The six sons, as we've already said, are the six enemies of material association. And Kamsa, he represents fear of material existence. So in this pastime, what's being illustrated is that our bhakti is very tinged with these six enemies of material association. And those contaminations will never be cleansed from our bhakti if we do not fear material existence. We have to actually fear material existence. What does fear material existence mean? It doesn't mean like, you know, I'm scared of heights or I'm scared of poisonous snakes. Fear of material existence means I fear taking birth in the kingdom of Maya, where there's every opportunity to forget Krishna, where there's every opportunity to be contaminated by these six horrible enemies of material association. This fear of material existence causes the sincere devotee to actually cry out for Krishna. Krishna says, Daivyesha gunamai mama maya dhratyaya man eva ye prapadyante mayame tam tarantite. Don't think for a moment, don't even think that you're going to overcome these six enemies of material association by your own efforts. It's not possible. Only if one surrenders unto me, then one can easily cross over this ocean of material existence. So fear of material existence means that one will take shelter of Krishna. So Prabhupada once said about his disciples that the problem with you Western boys and girls is that you are not enough afraid of Maya. You're not enough afraid of Maya. We think we can be, you know, complacent and comfortable here. Everything's okay. But it actually, at every moment, there's a fire burning under us. Imagine if the seat were to turn on fire all of a sudden. Whoever's sitting here would immediately jump off. So like that, the whole material existence is a forest fire. Samsara dava analita loka. And we simply need to realize that we're in the forest fire, and then we can call out to Krishna with real feeling. So one time, a devotee tells, I forget the devotee who tells this story on the Memories of Srila Prabhupada's video, Memories of Srila Prabhupada, that one day, the devotees were on a morning walk with Srila Prabhupada. Then it was time for greeting of the deities. So they came back to the temple. Govinda Mari Purusham. Everybody's paying their obeisances, jai, you know, looking at the deities. And this devotee noticed that when Srila Prabhupada's greeting the deities, he's not like we are. Govinda Mari Purusham. He was in deep prayer. So this devotee thought, I wonder what Srila Prabhupada prays when he comes in front of the deities. I wish, you know, I'd like to know. So later that day, he happened to have the opportunity to meet Srila Prabhupada in his room. Oh, I have to back up for a minute. On that morning walk, Srila Prabhupada asked the devotees a question. He said, "What is the difference between you and me?" And the devotees were thinking of so many suggestions, like, well, gosh, Prabhupada, there's like a lot of things different between you and us. Prabhupada said, "The difference between you and me is that you can always fall into Maya, and I cannot ever fall into Maya." And the devotees were like, "Yeah, that's Jai, Prabhupada, of course." So now the devotee witnesses Prabhupada offering sincere prayers to the deities. He later approaches Prabhupada in his room, and he said, "Prabhupada, can I ask you a question? Today at greeting of the deities, I saw that you're in like really sincere prayer. And I was just curious, like, what do you pray to the deities? I'd like to do that too." And Prabhupada said, "Oh, I was simply praying to Radha and Krishna that I may never fall into Maya." And the devotee said, "But Prabhupada, this morning you told us that you can never fall into Maya." And Prabhupada said, "And now you know why." Nobody is immune from Maya, only the person who sincerely calls out to Krishna. Sumati Devi, she tells this story that she was participating in a radio show that the devotees had, a weekly radio program. They would do little audio dramas on the radio. So one week, she was playing the role of Mother Yashoda. And it was the Leela where Krishna becomes enveloped in the coils of Kaliya serpent. So as Mother Yashoda, you know, she had her lines. So when Krishna became, you know, enveloped in the coils of Kaliya, she, as Mother Yashoda, shouted out, "Krishna! Krishna!" Later, they played that tape for Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada asked the devotee, "Who is that devotee who played the role of Yashoda? You please instruct her that she should always chant her japa like that." And seriously, this is how we should chant our japa. This is a sign of surrender. This is the sign. This is the evidence that we're actually afraid of material existence. So it's easy for us to say, "Oh yeah, I chant very nicely. I am chanting from my heart." We're hearing during the Festival of the Holy Name how much we should be chanting from our heart, not just lip service. "Yeah, I chant from my heart." It's easy to think we're doing so. But we need a little barometer, if you will, to test whether we're actually doing this. So if we're actually chanting with quality, it won't just be for the hour or two or three or four that we're sitting in the kirtan. The proof that we're actually chanting from our heart is that it manifests in every moment of our day. It spills over to every facet of our lifestyle, of our habits, etc. So Rupa Goswami has kindly given us a litmus test, if you will, on how sincerely, how purely are we practicing devotional service. So there it's said that in the Nectar of Instruction that if one is serious about making advancement in devotional service, he's not building a fire with one hand and pouring water on it with the other hand, but one is serious about making their devotional service a big and brilliant fire, then one will not, under any circumstances, engage in the following six activities. Atyahara Prayashascha. One will not engage in over-collecting, overeating, possessing more than necessary. One will not over-endeavor to achieve something. Whatever comes by my natural work. In my life, this lifetime, this is my natural propensity for working. Whatever comes from that natural work, that's what I accept. I don't make any big, you know, bombastic endeavor to get more than maybe I could get normally. Prajalpo Niyamagraha, that one does not use their tongue to speak unnecessarily, especially gossip about others. No prajalpa. One doesn't follow the rules and regulations of devotional service just to make a show that I'm doing it, but they're not putting their heart into it or getting any advancement from it. Nor does one say, oh, the rules and regulations aren't important, I'm above that, and throw the rules and regulations out. Asatsanga chaloyam cha. One does not take the association of non-devotees. Because whatever we associate with, we become affected by. So we'll become contaminated. And one is not greedy. Whatever I have, I'm satisfied with. I don't want more of it. Whether it's position, possession, whatever. And then he says, and there's six things that a serious devotee will do at all times to enhance that fire of devotional service throughout the day. Utsahan nishchaya daryat, that one will always endeavor with great enthusiasm. That means one's putting one's actual heart and soul into everything they do, paying attention to every detail. No detail, let it slip through the cracks. Paying attention to every detail with real life. One will be confident that, yes, I'm way down here on the scale of, you know, Krishna Bhakti, but I'm confident that if I just stay on the ship and follow the instructions that have been given to me through Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra, and I'm confident that the goal will be reached. And on this path, one will be very patient. Okay, I'm not getting the results yet. I've been trying, and I'm not reaping any results yet, but I know they're going to come, so I'll be patient. I'm not going to give up. Tat tat karma pravartanat. One follows all the rules and regulations of the nine processes of devotional service. He doesn't neglect any of the processes of devotional service. And then sangatyagat satovrite. One completely abandons all material association and he only strictly follows in the footsteps of the great acharyas, follows their example, follows their instructions, imbibes their mood. So this is the litmus test to see, am I practicing properly to ultimately chant properly? So if we take this little test, I think we can honestly admit that, oops, I'm guilty. This category of six things thou shalt not do, I'm guilty of doing at least some of them. And this category of six things that thou shalt do, I'm guilty of neglecting at least some of them. This is why we don't have a proper taste for chanting. We can't chant, whether it's kirtan or japa or what have you, yet neglect these things. So the fact that we become a little humbled when we take this inventory of our heart, we become a little humble, which should bring us to the point of understanding that I am very unfortunate, as Chaitanya Mahaprabhu himself says, Durdaivam Idrisamahajani Nanuraga, I have a great misfortune in my life. What is that misfortune? That misfortune is that I cannot experience a taste for the holy name. Why can I not experience a real taste for the holy name? Not a sentimental taste for the holy name that is here today, gone tomorrow. Not a superficial, external, looking like a taste for the holy name, but something that spills over into every aspect of my life. Even when the musical instruments are out of tune, the singer has a lousy voice, you know, the drummer's not keeping beat properly, whatever. Am I attracted to the music or am I attracted to the holy name? So what is that misfortune? I have a great misfortune that I'm not truly attached to the holy name. So as we understand from Bhagavad Gita, that rasavarjam rasopyasa paramdrishtva nivartate, because I don't have proper attraction to the holy name, I must be attracted to other subject matters. There's no third position. We're either attracted to the lower taste, material taste, or we're attracted to the param, superior taste. Because I lack that superior taste, I am forced to engage in the lower taste. I'm chanting my japa, but the mind is going everywhere else. Why? Because it's attracted to everything else. So Lord Chaitanya says, Durdaivam Idrisamahajani Nanuraga. Tears are flowing from Lord Chaitanya's eyes when he realizes how unfortunate I am. Later he prays, Nayanam Galadashudaraya Vadanam Gadgadarudaya Pulakar Nishchitam Vapukada Tavanamakrahani Bivishyati. Oh my Lord, when will my eyes be decorated with tears of love flowing constantly when I chant your holy name? But we cannot experience those tears. That prayer is for very advanced devotees. That prayer, Nayanam Galadashudaraya, that is a prayer offered by devotees who are on that level of ruchi or asakti. We cannot experience those tears. We can't even ask for those tears yet. First, we have to experience these tears. Durdaivam Idrisamahajani Nanuraga. I'm so unfortunate that I can't even chant the holy name of the Lord, what to speak of experience something from it. When one realizes that I have a misfortune, that is the greatest benediction by Krishna. Because when one is missing fortune, what does one do? If you're missing fortune, go look for it. But we're not going to look for it if we don't, you know. I think I have my keys in my purse, so I'm not looking for them, am I? But as soon as I realize, oh no, my keys are missing, then I start searching everywhere for them. So our current condition is that often we don't even realize our misfortune, so we're not looking for the fortune. But when we realize our misfortune, then we must eagerly go out and hunt for it. So our great fortune is that the Srimad Bhagavatam has risen like the sun to dispense all darkness and give us that highest truth. What is that highest truth that the Bhagavatam has come to bring to us? That highest truth is the science of Shuddha Bhakti, the science of pure devotional service. This science of pure devotional service is the process by which we can gain our fortune. So very early in the Srimad Bhagavatam, the instruction is there that, oh, you have no taste for hearing and chanting? Do you want to have it? Yes. Okay, here's what you do. Here's the secret formula. Shushu sho shradhanasya vasudeva kataruchi syan mahatsevaya vipra punya tirta nishevanat. Seek out that devotee who is completely free from all vice. That means they're free from the six enemies of material association. There's no kama, lust, there's no krodha, anger, there's no lobha, greed, there's no moha, illusion, there's no madha, madness, there's no matsarya, envy. Find that devotee. Yes, it's like looking for a needle in a haystack, that's a fact. But if you're sincere, find that devotee who's completely free from all vice. Simply render service to that devotee. By rendering service to such a devotee, what will happen? Vasudeva kataruchi. Taste for hearing and chanting the messages of Vasudeva, the holy name of Krishna, will arise in one's heart. Srila Prabhupada says, human reason fails to understand how, by serving the devotee Bhagavat or the book Bhagavat, that one gains gradual promotion on the path of devotion. It's a mystery. Why, if I serve a Mahabhagavat devotee, or any great devotee, someone greater than me, it's easy to find, just look around, there's many devotees greater than us. If I serve a pure devotee, I'm going to make advancement on the path of devotion? Well, first of all, in order for that formula to work, that service needs to be proper service. We have our idea of what rendering service is. But Rupa Goswami also says what that service should be. Anya bilashita shunyam jnana karmadyanavritam anukulyena krishnanushilanam. That devotional service has to be completely unmotivated by and not interrupted by desires for material gain, knowledge, etc. Devotional service should be done for the pleasure of Krishna or his bhakta. So, proportionate to how favorable our devotional service is, to that proportion, taste for hearing and chanting will arise in one's heart. So Krishna explains, well, why? Why, if I serve a devotee, will such taste arise? Krishna says, well, in the Bhagavatam, I should say, Sutta Goswami is continuing. Why? He says, Shrinvatam Svakata Krishna Punya Shravana Kirtana Hridyanta Stohyabhajani Vidunoti Saritsatam. That when one serves a devotee by hearing from them, that if the devotees hear and chant together, that I, the Supersoul, Paramatma within the heart of that devotee, will cleanse the heart of all the hindrances, the desires, the enemies of material association. Paramatma within the heart will pull out the scrub brush and cleanse the heart of all the gunk that is preventing ruchi from manifesting. Nashta prayeshu bhajeshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati utma shloke bhaktir bhavati naishtiki. When the heart is sufficiently cleansed, then bhakti is established in that heart as an irrevocable fact. That means it can't be revoked. That means it's there as a permanent fixture. Nobody can take it away. So this should be our intent as we're... Every jagya or sacrifice must have a sankalpa or an intention. Everything we do, if there's an intention, then we will reap the fruits of that sacrifice. So the intention of our chanting, especially at these festivals, like the Festival of the Holy Name here this weekend, our intention should be, let me purify my heart. How do I purify my heart? By becoming a servant of the devotees. In the Bhagavatam, further on, it says that Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam Bhukta Sangasya Jayate, that when one's heart is purified by this service to the devotees and by hearing, service to advanced devotees means hearing from them. So by this service to the devotees, scientific knowledge of the Supreme Personality of Godhead manifests in one's heart, and one becomes Mukta Sangasya Jayate. One is completely freed from material existence. So that the enemies are destroyed. Shoka Moha Bhayapaha. The devotional service, when it manifests in the heart, completely destroys lamentation, illusion, fear, etc. So as we're attending the Festival of the Holy Name, we should very much have as our intention that I am not here to be a nectar hound. Many of us have come here because we're seeking the nectar. Nectar is never attained when one comes in the mood of a nectar hound. Nectar is attained when we come in the mood of a service hound. The persons who are facilitating, organizing, managing, doing all the incredible number of hours of work for weeks and weeks and weeks on end to allow us to participate in this festival, they're the ones that are going to get the nectar. Those of us that show up with our comfortable seat and sit down in the tent close to the heater and have our prasadam all ready for us, and we're there to enjoy, well, we won't get the nectar. So we're not here to enjoy the holy name or to even enjoy the association of devotees. We're here to serve. And to the extent that we become service hounds, to that extent, we can realize the actual fruits of the Festival of the Holy Name. So we'll stop there and humbly request the senior devotees to please bless us that our devotional service can evolve from its current stage of really just being a theoretical thing to coming to the platform of actual realization born from sincere practice. So we'll stop there and see if there's any discussion. Is there another microphone, or should we use this one? I can repeat your question.
Thank you for the nice class. It was really enlightening class. So, while you were reading those verses from Chaitanya Charitamrita, I saw that, no, that one of the verses said, like Krishna was being, you know, wounded by the arrows from the Cupid. So, like, no, Krishna is called Madan Mohan, one who attracts the Cupid. Like, but like in that particular verse, it said, like, no, he got wounded by the arrows from the Cupid. Can you see?
Okay, so Prabhu's asking that in one of the verses that we read from the Chaitanya Charitamrita, that it was mentioned that Krishna was actually wounded by the arrows of Cupid, and this is confusing because we hear that he's Madan Mohan, he defeats Cupid, so how is this? Actually, Krishna is not attracted to anything and anybody. He's only attracted to one thing, and that is pure bhakti, which is Radharani is the embodiment of that pure bhakti. So when we hear that Krishna is wounded by the arrows of Cupid, it doesn't mean ordinary Cupid, but rather that love and attraction that he has for Radharani. Nothing attracts Krishna. Absolutely nothing attracts Krishna because he's self-satisfied. So we can never attract Krishna into our lives. But there's one thing that attracts Krishna, and that is Radharani. So Radharani is Bhakti Devi. She's the Ladini Shakti. Only when the Ladini Shakti enters our heart can Bhakti manifest in our heart. We have the seed, but it needs to be germinated. Like you have a credit card, but it doesn't work until you activate it, right? It's just a piece of plastic. But when you activate it, so that Bhakti Lata Bij means it's been activated. What's it been activated by? It's been activated by the gift of at least small sample of the Ladini Shakti being brought down through the Guru Parampara. So this is what attracts Krishna, is that Ladini Shakti. So we want that Ladini Shakti to manifest in our heart. But it requires lots and lots of begging, lots and lots of practice. And again, it begins when we serve the devotees who have it. Find that devotee who has it. Serve that devotee humbly. And gradually, step by step, such bhakti will manifest in our heart. So much so that the day will come when we say, "Oh, Krishna!" He comes. A child cries for the mother, right? I've witnessed many mothers. The kids are calling for them. They're ignoring them. They're like, "Oh, shut up, I'm busy." Right? The kids, "Hey, Mom. Hey, Mom. Mom." And she's like, "Shut up, I'm cooking dinner, you know." "No, come on, I really want you." Later. But when the kid is actually in distress, not just, "Mom, come play with me," but when they're actually in distress, like, God forbid, the kid falls down the stairs, breaks their leg, whatever. "Mommy!" Like, you know, I'm not even going to try that. They scream with such sincere... Mother immediately understands this is a real call out of distress. And in less than a nanosecond, she's across the house and with the child. She doesn't care if the milk's boiling over on the stove, and, you know, it doesn't matter. She's over there. That's the only call that attracts her. She's not attracted by the "Mommy." You know? So Krishna's not actually attracted to our chanting. "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna. I'm reading the newspaper while I chant and thinking so many..." But when we come to that point, like I said, the story of Sumati, right? Playing the role of Mother Yashoda in the play of Kaliya Serpent. When Prabhupada heard that, he was so affected. He said, "Please instruct her to always chant her japa like that." That was not an instruction to her, it was an instruction to all of us, because she told us the story, right? Then Krishna's heart is like, he can't tolerate the calling of his devotees. He has to come. Anything else?
Line with Rupa Goswami. I really do. I never heard your class. Just to have a further, just one point. Srila Prabhupada in Nectar of Devotion, I believe 20 or 21st chapter, he says, as you said, that one has to feel need to be fortunate. So I was trying to link with that, that I heard it from Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, but when I saw that Prabhupada actually gave little more secret, he says, "Well, every disciple must cry for his guru."
When disciple cries for guru because he has a relationship with guru, he see the needs of his guru in his life. I don't see the need of Krishna in my life. Even though theoretically I hear, I am a part of Krishna, I am a servant of Krishna, idea is there, but I don't feel it. I feel I need car, I need my mommy, I need my daddy, but I do need guru when I am so close, the relationship built. So Srila Prabhupada said every disciple should cry. When the disciple cries, that time the heart softens, that is called bhava mahadavagni. The material miseries or association will be extinguished. That time it will transfer from guru nishtha to gauru nishtha. And Prabhupada will do that. And then gauru nishtha will go to Radha Krishna.
Very nice. Thank you very much. We hope that by the end of the Festival of the Holy Name we see oceans of tear water on the ground. Then we'll know that our chanting is a little successful. Okay, anything else? Sri Devi?
I was also going to add to your class. Thank you so much for your presence and your association. Also, I think it's important to remember the 10 offenses and practicing the 26 qualities of a devotee. I was just wondering if you had any comments on that, how that plays into what you were saying.
Well, the 10 offenses are only committed to the holy name, they're only committed while we're still in the Namabhas stage. We're in the clearing stage. So in the Namaparad stage, of course, that's all it is Namaparad. In the Namabhast stage, we're committing offenses, but we're really trying not to, but out of habit and laziness, they still occur, you know? We cannot chant without offenses unless and until we allow Shudanam to come into our life. So there's a process for inviting Shudanam into our life, into our heart. And that's what we just delineated, second chapter of the first canto of the Bhagavatam. It all begins with service to the devotees. We keep thinking that there's another formula. I can chant without offenses. I can chant from my heart. I can chant purely by just trying really hard. You know, I'm going to control my mind. I'm going to pay attention. I'm going to get into it. I'm going to sit here for 12 straight hours and cure it. No, that'll never happen. We have to serve. So if you try to sidestep that formula and go on chanting Namabhas, at best, chant Namabhas. So we have to serve the holy names. And service to the devotees is both gross and subtle. So somehow or other, we have to chant in the mood of service. I'm serving my spiritual master by chanting. Because just like if you've ever worked in the kitchen, you have a collection of knives, you do not pick up that knife, which is rusty, crooked, dull. Rather, you pick up that knife that's sharp, shiny, straight. This is the one I'm going to use. It's just an instrument in my hand. I'm the cook, but this instrument is going to be used. So the spiritual master wants to use us as instruments to spread Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement to all conditioned souls. But we're lousy instruments. We're crooked, we're rusty, we're dented, we're dull. So it behooves me to become a better instrument. How am I going to do that? I have to become purified. So if I chant nicely, my intention for chanting is to be purified. Why do I want to be purified? Well, because it feels good to be purified. You know, you get high when you're purified. It's peaceful on this platform. No, that's not why we want to be purified. We want to be purified so we can be better instruments in the hands of Srila Prabhupada and all our gurus. So chanting should be done not in the mood of enjoying. I'm going to lead kirtan so I can be in the spotlight, or I'm going to attend kirtan so I can get high from the vibrations. We should only chant in the mood of service. I chant so I can serve better, and I serve so I can chant better. You can't have one without the other. Otherwise, nama-parad will continue forever. And the 26 qualities of devotee naturally manifest when we surrender to the holy name and service. Okay, one last comment, and then we have a tight morning. The festival begins at 10. Some devotees are leaving for U of F Harinam, so if we can just take two more minutes, and then we really should stop.
Hare Krishna, thank you so much for the nice class. I appreciate your directness and your being so straightforward. It's very refreshing. And I just wonder, you mentioned that the proper way to serve advanced devotees is by hearing from them. And I wonder what other suggestions you could give. What is the proper way to serve devotees nicely?
Well, Rupa Goswami explains in Nectar of Instruction, how to serve devotees. We give gifts, we accept gifts, we give prasadam, we accept prasadam, we inquire confidentially, right? Reveal our mind like that. So if we're serving a more advanced devotee, then we should reveal our mind to them so they can see where we're at and help us, you know, deal with our anartas. And we should hear submissively, which means whatever they instruct me, I follow. Not that I hear them say, chant nicely, but then I go home and don't chant nicely. If we're dealing with devotees who are on an equal level with us, we make friends with them and do service with each other and share our realizations with each other. If we're dealing with devotees who are less advanced than us, then we give them mercy. We instruct them, we correct them, we give them service to do. So, you know, we have to be at least a Majjhima Adhikari that we can discern who's up, who's down, who's in the middle. But when we're too neophyte, we can't even discern who's an advanced devotee, who's a lesser devotee. So here we are instructing advanced devotees, right? And we're hearing from less advanced devotees because we don't know how to discern. So it all begins with hearing, especially hearing about devotees, because we can't discern who's a devotee and who's not a devotee, who's an advanced devotee and who's a less devotee, unless we hear about what are the qualities of a, you know, Kanishta Bhakta, what are the qualities of a Majjhima Bhakta, what are the qualities of an Uttama Bhakta. First figure out that, then we know how to serve them. Okay, one last comment by Trivedipati.
One you should definitely hear from. This is also an invitation meeting.
Yes, one who's completely free from all vice, especially that propensity to criticize others. Hear from that devotee. Just go on hearing. Okay, I apologize if we missed anybody else's comments. Thank you very much. Grantaraj Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.